Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Andy Jacobs.
And welcome once again to the H&J Daily, some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. Well, we covered some ground once again with the various topics of discussion.
Yes, we did, really.
We also were joined this year by a filmmaker, and he'd not been in for 7 years when he was looking to raise the money for the film he was chatting about. But he has got it now.
He's come back now. Now he's made his film.
Oh, yeah, but it's great. It's about Frank Sidebottom, comic genius, of course, no longer with us, Chris Seavey, but a brilliant character and an interesting film, and you'll hear lots about that. And
Britain's leading penny farthing rider.
Yeah, he's going to ride from Land's End to John O'Groats in 5 days on a penny farthing, really. So that, and here it all is.
Good afternoon, Paul. I watched quite an entertaining under 21 friendly between England and Germany last night. Pretty enjoyable. Mm. Germany well on top, as Moose said, in the first half. Could have been 3 or 4 nil up. But it was 1-1 at half time. And then in the end, England were a little bit unlucky to lose at the death. But it was a good performance and a lot to look forward to in the summer. I think Solanke, I've liked this player for a long time. When he was at Chelsea, I was incredibly disappointed that he chose to go to Liverpool. We didn't really get a chance there. But he could be, either next summer or certainly by 2022, a real alternative to Harry Kane.
Do you think he'll get a run of games at Liverpool? Do you think he'll get enough football to train on?
No, he's got the Bournemouth, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah, of course.
That's what I mean.
Of course, yes.
I was disappointed when he went to Liverpool, but he went to Bournemouth. Hopefully he will play a lot more now.
Has he been sold to Bournemouth? Has he actually been sold?
Okay. He actually decided to take
the...
I like him. He's got something about him. So, yeah, that was good. The most amusing thing, though, was half-time, Shane Warne and Goffey's hair transplant ad. I don't know if you've seen it.
No, I've not. No, no.
Well, I'd say the acting makes the Sturmey Archers look like Hamlet. Honestly. It's not great.
No? Is there acting in it, then? Is it acting?
Well, it's sort of acting.
Well, talk us through. I've not seen it. What happens in the ad?
I think Shane says something like...
So who's in it? That's what I mean.
Oh, yeah, Shane Warne and Darren Goff.
And Darren Goff, okay.
So Shane says to Goffey something like, yeah, your hair's looking pretty good at the moment. It's not too bad, is it?
Yeah.
that sort of thing, really. And yeah, and Shane says, oh, yeah, thanks to X, whoever company it is, I can't remember.
Yeah.
And
shouldn't they have done it in the style of all those great ads, you know? Yeah, look, your hair's looking great at the moment. Oh, yeah, because that's because I go to X hair transplants. X hair transplants? Yes, I. X hair transplants. What, the one? I can't do the voices. I've got Tommy Cooper.
The one in the high street.
Yeah, good afternoon. Something like that.
So,
one in the high street. What was that number again? They should have done it like that, shouldn't they?
Very much so, And Germany had a player called Stenzel, which I thought, obviously, Banksy's favourite player. And I like the idea they spray paint him at the end of the game. They put him up against the...
Stenzel.
Yeah. They put him up against the wall and then paint round his outline.
That's a nice sign. Good old Stenzel, yeah. Pictures of him everywhere. What did you think of the young German side? Were they good?
Very good.
Okay.
I tell you, if I was a Leicester fan, I'd be very, very excited.
Would you?
Because they've got so much young English talent. When you add it up, it's mad.
Yeah.
Harvey Barnes, who played really well.
Yeah, yeah.
Chilwell has done great. Chowdhury, who came on.
Yeah.
Madison, who came on. Damari Gray started and played the whole game. That's young.
I know.
You know, that is something really to build on for Brendan Rodgers. I think they can towards top six.
We often talk about sort of Tottenham and young talent, but, you know, you look at Leicester have bought a lot of that in. They did with Gray and they had with Barnes as well. But But still,
it's good scouting.
Good scouting and a sensible approach. You know, they all look like they can cut it, don't they? So, absolutely. Yeah, you're right. I think Jeff Peters and co. should be all very delighted about the future for their club, really.
Now, I heard David Seaman on the show this morning. I saw him actually leaving the office today.
Okay, yeah.
As I was coming in and said that I had a chat with him. And I was looking at him in the... There's a big ad for him and Ally McCoist today in The Sun and in The Times. And... I was looking at him and I was thinking, you know what, you do look better with your moustache. So I've done a comparison. Would you not say that suits David Seaman better than no moustache?
You've just drawn one on. I think he looks fine without it. It's just that he has quite a big top lip, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think it works well for me. I think I might leave this for him in his locker.
Really?
Well, you know, just a little,
I did this many years ago. I did it many years ago on Sky with Kenny Sanson. I did a show with Kenny and I said... I always thought you looked great with a tash cam. What'd you get rid of it for? And he was telling me why. So we had a vote on the show, and at the end of it, more people felt he looked better. So really? We got a bit of electrical tape. And so for the final shot of the show, and it's good night from me, it's good night from Kenny, and he did. He looked $1 million. So, yeah, I think, you know, sometimes...
You've got to be careful how you use that electrical tape. You don't want it looking too Germanic sort of thing. It needs to be long enough.
Oh, no, it was quite long. It wasn't just under his nose. That's not the way. No, we kind of reenacted the kind of length of Kenny's tash in those days, of course.
Well done. Yeah, good.
Anyway, what's coming up today? I hear, well, you may not
cleared my throat in this new studio. It'll be a new thing.
Okay, you make it. Thank you very much.
I've inaugurated it.
I think you probably
Thank
have. You.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Hawksby Andy Jacobs here on Talk Sport, and our next guest we chat to, Steve Sullivan. He joined us about 7 years ago on the show, just about to do a Kickstarter campaign to make a film, the life of the great Frank Sidebottom and his creator, the man inside the head, Chris Seavey. The film's done there, we're really delighted to say, and before we chat about it, let's hear a little bit from the trailer.
Hello, Frank Sidebottom here! Can I just try one of them? Is that all right?
No.
There is a different way of looking at the world. There's a different way of acting in this world.
He was his own comedy universe.
No one's ever seen him with his head off. That was the big thing.
Clearly, this was a man on a mission of rank insanity.
When I met him, he came to work in the factory. This guy walks in. I just realised then and then I am so in love with this person.
Great fun growing up, had the time of our lives.
I can remember us going to a fancy dress party and he made a paper mache head and it was Frank.
There we are, just a taste of the film being Frank. And
we're with the man who has seen him with his head off.
Yes, that's right. And it's Steve Sullivan. Good afternoon, Steve. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Well, look, so we're so chuffed that the film did get made, but it kind of proves how long it takes, 7 years of hard work and fundraising.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a labour of love, kind of crowdfunding it, crowdsourcing it, tracking down all the people that knew who was behind Frank Sidebottom's head all those years and kept it all quiet and mysterious, interviewing them, and then years of editing it all together.
Chris came on with us a couple of times, not in the studio, on the phone, to chat about a couple of football projects he was doing over the years. And from what we know of his story, I'm guessing that when he spoke to us, even though he was at home on the phone, he probably just didn't put the nose clip on. He probably put the head on as well, because Chris and Frank were very different, weren't they?
Yeah, he would often put Frank's head on if he was just going to be on the radio, you know, in a radio studio where there's no need to do it. But, you know, it was that in-depth for him to become Frank Sidebottom. It was a complete separate persona to his real life, and it was a complete fictional world that he created for this character.
He was a one-off, wasn't he, an original, and kind of in a unique sort of British absurdist tradition, you know, of which there have been other people, I suppose, like Harry Hill and Spike Milligan and all those sort of absurdists. You know, he was in that envelope, wasn't he? And possibly not as recognised as others.
Yeah, he. I mean, you've hit the nail on the head. He was a total absurdist, and I think he was influenced by Monty Python and the Goons very much so. You mentioned Harry Hill. I mean, a lot of those people come after Frank. He was kind of like the only person in the 80s when it was all about alternative comedy and very political comedy. He was just flying the flag forward, just being a weirdo, you know, being very daft and silly. And he absolutely loved it. But it's the extent that he took it to as well. I mean, Frank Sidebottom had his own Sunday League football team. you know, called the Temporary Big Shorts. And no matter where Chris was in the world, well, normally in the UK, doing his act, he had to be back Sunday mornings so Frank could be down the park pitch managing his own Sunday league team. You know, it's like that's the extent to which he took it. And that's not a performance for money either. That's just Frank wanting to have his own Sunday league team. No one's getting paid anything to do that, but the creativity carries on down the park on a Sunday morning.
Yeah, he did. The football wise, the Timberley Big Shot shirt is the kind of old City away strip, so you think he's a City fan, but he loved Altrincham, didn't he? And he actually did some bits for United as well.
Well, Frank was an Altrincham fan,
yeah.
Until they asked him not to be anymore because he said he got his head stuck in the turnstile. one week and the fire brigade had to cut him out. But yeah, Frank used to be on like Match of the Day when Altrincham had a good cup run or something like that. Chris Seavey was a blue. He was a massive City fan,
right? Which is probably why they had that classic old black and red strip,
yeah.
The away shirt,
yeah.
I'm sure in the film, we discover that kind of Chris had his demons as well, didn't he? He kind of, with Frank, going out on the road with Frank, lived a bit of a rock and roll lifestyle.
Yeah, he did, you know, he did for sure. He was, his wife describes him as quite a compulsive character, Chris Seavey. So, there was drink involved and there was drugs and the film doesn't shy away from that. You know, the whole point of the film was to actually, that's why it's called Being Frank. It was about people being honest about this very secretive guy and what he was like all those years. And, you know, Chris was somebody who absolutely lived his life to extremes, both with alcohol but also with creativity and felt tip pens and everything else. You know, he was a compulsive workaholic.
Lots of people in his orbit. We heard some of them there, some of those comedians that loved him, some of those that knew him. John Ronson's involved as well.
Johnny Vegas, we heard that.
Yeah, John Ronson was in his band, wasn't he? He ended up in Frank Sidebottom's band, touring with him.
In the old Blimey Big Band for a couple of years, yeah. And so was Mark Radcliffe as well. So was Chris's brother Martin and the bass player from the Freshies, Rick Sarko, and all kinds of unusual musicians and performers kind of came together to be Frank's backing band. But despite the talent they all had, I mean, they barely rehearsed. His brother says, they were doing bad versions of other people's songs with no rehearsal, which is what Frank wanted it to be like. He wanted it to be shambolic.
If people are unaware of Frank, there's plenty on YouTube. I watched a very funny bit just before the show in Blackpool, a very funny piece. Yeah, yeah. And so people might want to familiarise themselves with him before they watch the film and give it a bit more context, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, but also what I found with the film as well is that even Frank's biggest fans, who know everything about Frank Sidebottom, they still don't know very much about who was the man inside the head. Mm-hmm. And that's what the film does, is for the first time it takes you inside the head and reveals the artist who was in there for decades and what he was trying to do.
You worked with Frank and Chris, and you spent more time, you made a film with him, didn't you? And you kind of spent more time with Frank, very little time with Chris, really.
Yeah, we did a film called The Magical Temple Tour together, which was Frank Sidebottom taking 100 of his biggest fans on an open-top bus trip around the village of Timperley, which is an obscure village on the edge of Manchester.
Yeah.
And the joke was, it's a village, but you're having a day trip around it. So, you know, he would take people to the post office and show you the fact that they've got two post boxes outside the post office, one for left-handed people, one for right-handed people. He also wanted to have a lock-in at the chippy and cram as many people in that we could set the British record for the most number of people in a chip shop at one time. You know, so it was just this absurd day out. But yeah, I met Chris for about 5 minutes that day, and the 5 minutes I spent with him, they just left me with more questions than answers, you know, hence this film.
Did he write and plan all this stuff, or was it kind of just he'd get an idea and then he'd just go with it?
I think he would just create everything in the moment. I don't think he had much of a long-term plan for most of his life. He would just, what can I think of today that's going to amuse me? What's going to be funny right now? And that's what he wanted to do. And that's what he spent his time doing.
Interesting.
He did love football. He kept coming back to football with the car. It wasn't just that. It's some very funny stuff. It's got absolutely nothing to do with football. But
the World Cup shirt. The World Cup song. Three shirts on my line.
That's it. That's where I think we may have spoken to him. But he had an old album years ago. He had You're Going Home on an Organised Football Coach.
Yeah.
And there's only one referee and there's two linesmen, but there's only one referee. And 0-0, 0-0, 0-0, 0-0, 0-0 was on it as well. So
yeah, that was... The 0-0 chant was one of his greatest moments for Altrincham. Yeah,
So it's a sad story, isn't it? Because Chris, so I think we probably spoke to him last time, shortly before he died. He died in 2010.
Yeah, he did. which was a real shame. But, you know, when he died, one of the stories around Chris was how tragic it was that he died so young at 54. But what the film kind of shows and what I discovered from making it is just how much work he managed to make in those 54 years. It's extraordinary how much he did. I mean, we're talking, I had hundreds of hours of footage and hundreds of hours of radio and hundreds of hours of just work in progress and everything. He was just so compulsively creative, not just as Frank, but also as Chris. And the stuff that he made as Chris, most people haven't seen, even if they're really familiar with Frank. Yeah.
And a lot of love for the character, I mean, to the point where, you know, they crowdfunded the statue of him in Timperley, haven't they? This one there. Yeah. In this, have you seen the statue? It's fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful. And, you know, the thing I've always said I loved about the statue is it's not on a plinth. He's not raised above you. He's on your level. He's just on the ground floor, so you can go and just hang out with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He would have loved City's success.
Cool, that's true. Yeah.
He might not have liked the way it happened, but the way it came around, but he would have loved the glory.
He may not have understood City's success. He wasn't used to success.
No, I would have just loved him when all the hierarchy had come over from the Middle East and he was asked to play one of the lounges. Yeah. That would have been fantastic, wouldn't it?
Well, there is a story that got cut out of the film where Frank was asked to do some half-time entertainment at Man City at Main Road, and he said to them, all I need is a little card table in the middle of the centre circle and I'm sorted. So Frank went out at half time and started doing sleight of hand close up magic in a stadium where he's holding up the card to like the home fans who are 70 yards away and going, is that your card? And bearing in mind they can't hear what he's saying either, because he's not mic'd up, he's just in this head, so they just booed him off. But he loved that, you know. He was like, that's a great gig, that's a great performance. If you can leave like 70,000 people just absolutely baffled, then that suited Frank Sidebottom completely.
I thought your analogy with Grayson Perry was interesting.
It was performance art, really. It was more than just a funny character at times. It was proper performance art, wasn't it?
Yeah,
really?
For definite, there is an artist at work inside Frank Sidebottom's head. And even though he made everything look amateurish, cheap, throwaway and silly, underneath there was the soul of an artist, you know, as valid as Van Gogh or anybody trying to just put out his statement of what he thought about the world. The irony is that Chris became taken over by Frank in the end, and it became Frank, not Chris, that actually existed as far as most people were concerned.
So where can we see the film then, Steve?
Well, it comes out on Friday in cinemas, and it comes out on digital as well. We have a website called beingfrank.film where people can find out where it's showing nearest to them and book tickets, or they can watch it at home online.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story.
In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
Talking of age, congratulations to Major Jeff Bird of Exeter.
Jeff Bird.
And he's 102.
Oh, yeah.
And he puts his 102-year longevity down to...
Glass of whiskey and swimming every day.
Porridge.
Oh, okay.
You
wow.
missed the, that was the other of the three.
Yeah. Does he have a little bit of whiskey in the porridge?
He didn't mention whiskey, he just mentioned porridge.
Okay, fantastic.
So that's if you want to live for a long, just have porridge and whiskey, preferably together every morning. I'll do it.
Well, he didn't mention whiskey, Andy. Well, it's not
a lot of people do,
the
don't they?
Mick McCarthy was at it again last night. You see, that was a good result. Back-to-back wins. No bad thing. And they were getting stuck into John Delaney again, the FAI executive vice president.
They were throwing tennis balls.
They were throwing tennis balls.
Told us on breakfast.
That's right. They were a lot of tennis balls. And Paddy Power, Mick said, Paddy Power were taking odds on me getting hit on the head with one of the balls.
Yeah.
So he said, I turned around ready to head one back.
Well, he would have done.
He is good value, Mick, isn't he?
Of course,
really?
He is. Yeah.
Guy Havold was interviewing him, I think, for Sky, and I said, if I say the word Saipan, what do you say to that? He said, well, in my house, we have expletive of the day. Anybody mentions that word? So he said, congratulations, Guy, you're the expletive of the day.
That's fantastic.
But, certainly from a press point of view, it's good to have him back.
No, absolutely, and hopefully he'll do a good job. We had a bit of an interesting incident in the office earlier when one of our colleagues turned to another one of the colleagues and said, how's your weekend?
On a Wednesday. That's
on a Wednesday.
That's quite that contentious.
Definitely not right. I'm surely there's a Tuesday cutoff.
I mean,
he
was halfway through Wednesday, so he could have easily have said, what have you got planned for the weekend?
It was as relevant,
wasn't it, Andy?
We can't allow that.
What are you going for? Tuesday morning, do you have a good weekend Tuesday morning?
That's it. You can't say it Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah.
Jerry Spice, Jerry Horner.
It's not really a name.
Jerry Horner.
Spice.
Well, Jerry's Halliwell Horner, to give her a full title, has hired a voice coach to ensure her singing.
No, it's true. I'm just saying to the producer, I'm agreeing with the producer, no one has ever called her Jerry Spice. Of all the things she's been called over the years, Jerry Spice, apart from by your nan.
What was she? She wasn't Posh Spice. It was Posh Spice Baby. Sport. No, she wasn't sporty.
No, she wasn't sporty.
That'd be ridiculous.
You're getting that wrong.
Ginger.
She was Ginger, yeah.
Ginger. That's such a long time, isn't it?
He doesn't remember the Spice Girls, does he?
He probably wasn't even born.
No, I don't think he was.
Anyway, she's hired a voice coach to ensure her singing is note perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Good luck with that one.
Well, you never know.
You never know.
Yeah.
Good happen. She doesn't want to be shown up.
Okay. Well, you don't, do you? I mean, you know, in that environment.
That's very true.
John.
Very, very true. Frankie Dettori said that he learnt to speak English watching EastEnders and Les Dawson. Does he do Get Out of My Pub?
Get Out of My Pub. It does lend itself to a kind of Anglo-Italian accent. Get Out of My Pub.
I thought that thing where Les never actually spoke but implied to Roy Barraclough. You know that thing where he'd sort of go...
Oh, yeah, just pull all the faces. What was the other show he watched? He watched Les Dawson.
Les Dawson and EastEnders. And he said that's how he learned to speak English.
So has he got a succession of very clever mother-in-law gags as well?
I have. It's very possible.
Yeah. And what, pretty decent pianist as well. Really.
Very true. Yeah. And I'm putting off having a Chelsea rant. I'm so... Honestly, this international break has been a disaster, really.
We've had two of your players have played brilliantly for England. So what's your problem?
Because you've got Olivier Giroud, who is... I think he's third or fourth on the French all-time scorers list.
Mm.
He won the World Cup in the summer, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Playing pretty well. But he's unhappy. He's saying, well, you know, we've been told we might have to stay, but, you know, I want to play. So that's one that's unhappy. Christensen, who's one of the best young defenders in Europe, he played three games this year. He's unhappy.
Mm.
Hudson-Odoi, according to the Times, he still wants to leave. Loftus-Cheek has definitely not played enough. Barkley hasn't played enough. But why favour Kovacic? He doesn't even belong to Chelsea. He won't be there next time. I'm really, really fed up with this manager. The idea, he's got this mad idea that you can only play 14 players because Pep Guardiola has really steered this bloke a pup. He said to him, you know, oh, you can only play 14 players. That's all you can teach in one season. So meanwhile, he's got nine players in the squad who are completely and utterly unhappy,
yeah,
who never get a look in. you know, it's a real, you know, it's a real turn off for any. So.
Do you want to, I've got something lighter for you. We're not with the man of the time. This is a little piece that appeared in The Guardian, on the Guardian website. Mm. It's a tale of a referee smuggled out of the dressing rooms after fans turned ugly. And in 1951, it was Norwich City versus Newport County, a game in the old 3rd Division South.
Mm.
And the weather was appalling, and quite a lot of sporting events had been called off in the immediate vicinity. But the referee decided, A.H. Blythe, when referees were known just by their initials.
Oh, I remember A.H.
Yeah.
Blythe.
You remember A.H. Blythe, do you?
Oh, yeah.
A.H., would he ever saw you off? Do you remember him?
Of course not.
Okay, well, I'm
going to... No, the only ones, the earliest
you're
one.
You're of an age, I thought you might have known him.
Ken Aston is the earliest one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, he wasn't involved. This is A.H. Blythe.
Okay.
Or maybe it's R. Blythe. I don't know. I'm guessing it's A.H. So he examined the pitch, said the game... no, to R, as his friends. So the game goes on, and Newport go 5-1 up.
Hmm.
And the weather gets worse. And the turning point for him, which tells you all kind of all you need to know about the heavy ball argument from the old days, is that one of the players heads the ball and is knocked out, knocked clean out, by heading back a powerful drive. And at that point, he thinks it's far too dangerous. And he abandons the match with the home team winning 5-1.
You can't do that.
Well, he finished the game early. He felt a bit rough himself, apparently, and collapsed with exhaustion in the dressing room.
Why so
once they got him back there.
He wouldn't pass the test today, would he?
So while he was lying there, semi-conscious in the dressing room, Blythe, 2,000 people gathered round.
Oh, yeah.
2,000 irate Newport fans. And it was decided by the police they would dress him up as a St. John's ambulance man and get him into a police car. And then...
So that St. John's ambulance man looks quite ill, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And remarkably, like, Blythe.
It took him to the station. So it's the old thing about the crowd were with me all the way, but I managed to shake him off at the station. But yeah, what about that?
Oh, great.
One of the rare occasions when a referee or official had to be smuggled out the ground in different uniform.
Great,
anyway,
great story.
We've been rejoined by Joe Shannon with some breaking news.
That's supposed
it's
to be
okay. Yeah. There was quite a dramatic pause
breaking
there. You could have heard.
News.
Yeah, that's nice. The Frank Side bottom
one. Thank you.
Anyway, Joe, sorry, tell us what's happened.
Yes, Paul, this is not entirely unexpected. We've been hearing about it throughout the day, but it has been confirmed now in the last few minutes that Gordon Taylor is stepping down as the chief executive of the PFA after nearly 4 decades in the job. His position, of course, has come under pressure following a power struggle between himself and PFA chairman Ben Purkis. However, we're hearing that Taylor will remain in the role while an independent review of the organisation is conducted. So he's stepping down. He'll stay in the role while this review is continued, but he will step down as chief executive of the PFA after nearly 4 decades in the job. That just being confirmed in the last few moments here.
Thank you, Jack.
Thank you very much, Joe. So, yeah, the long goodbye we kind of discussed effectively.
Right.
Understandably, because, you know, after that, there's quite a lot of handing over to do when you've been doing a job for 38
years. Absolutely.
Really. Anyway, there's another example of a referee having to leave the ground in disguise, and that comes from Argentina. So we'll keep our powder dry on that one. Vickery, who will be joining us shortly. He's got all sorts of referee and shenanigans that goes on there. But in the meantime, Anne, do you have anything else?
Well, this letter, you spotted it earlier, the letter I have cut out from Tony from Selby, he wrote to the Daily Star.
Not Tony Selby?
No, just Tony from Selby.
Okay.
He's writing about a bloke called Chelsea Steve. He says, Chelsea Steve, totally agree with you about Ronnie O'Sullivan, M8. I hate it when people do that. He's the most talented sportsman ever. And by the way, NFC forever. If you think Ronnie's boring, you want to go to Specsavers. Surely thinking something is boring is a matter of opinion. You can't get opinions at Specsavers, do you? So you haven't thought it through, Tony, you idiot.
Think a touch. I think you're deconstructing that a bit too much.
Well, that's what I do in
the
morning.
I mean, this is a letter to the Star. It wasn't to the New York Review of Books.
Yes. Somebody I know had 2 letters published, 2 texts printed in the Star.
Two today.
Yes. It's a world record for
him. He's got a lot of time on his hands.
He has, yeah.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast from TalkSport.
The other thing doing the rounds, and Andy, you've probably seen this, haven't you? This was the game in Turkey, the under-14 player in Turkey.
Yes, just saw it on the screen before.
I think he's on for a fair play award, don't you?
Mm.
Was given a penalty that he felt he didn't deserve because he fell over. He said to the ref, not a pen ref, and she said, well, I'm sorry, I've given it now, you've got to take it. So he just deliberately stuck it wide.
It's amazing that refs don't have the licence to change. Well, I suppose once they've made the ref's decision, yeah, is final, even if it's wrong.
She, I mean, it did actually, you know, to be fair to her, kind of, unless it was only at one particular angle, the angle she saw it, you can understand why she thought it. And he certainly didn't dive, as he got straight up and said, it's not a ref. He was
I've seen worse pens. He did quite a good job of it, really.
Yeah, that's right. It wasn't too bad. Anyway, let's enter the world of endurance penny farthing racing.
Oh, good.
And because our next guest is planning to get from Land's End to John O'Groats, one end of the country to the other, effectively, in 5 days on that old Victorian contraption. But having just watched footage of him riding through London on a penny farthing, and look at the speeds he gets up, suddenly I'm a believer. I couldn't see it until then. Richard Thoday joins us. Hiya, Richard.
It's okay.
Yeah, look, as I said, now I've seen you in action, because I thought this seemed impossible.
We thought it would take about 3-4 weeks.
Well, normally you see people on a penny farthing and they're kind of slowly kind of trundling along the street. They don't look like they're built for speed, but looking at your bike, it looks like it's a racing penny farthing, isn't it?
It is, that's right, yeah. I think that people's idea of a penny farthing, when if they haven't seen them at speed, they think of it as more a comedy bike or a circus bike, very slow, cumbersome thing. But no, they really can shift those machines, as you've seen on that film, yeah.
Are you still the champion? You are the UK national penny farthing champion. Do you still hold the record?
I was. We've not had a championship race for quite some time now. So I think it's kind of falling into that void.
But that'll be quite
3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
But no, I'm one of the fastest riders. But there are some other extraordinarily competent riders, and they're amazing to race when you get into a bunch of riders close together at speeds of sort of 25, 30 miles an hour banking around corners. It's it's quite exciting, shall we put it.
How did you get into this? What made you go from, I take it you started on a regular bike and graduated to a penny farthing?
Yeah, I did. There's a wonderful race that happens over in Cheshire, at Knutsford, but only happens once every 10 years. And when I first heard about it, I sort of entered immediately because it only happens once every 10 years. And then stood back and thought, hang on, I've never ridden a penny farthing. I haven't got a penny farthing. So I had to go out and find one to borrow and learn to ride it, and entered the race and came just about last. But it was such good fun. It's difficult to describe the kind of sense of exhilaration and speed when you're that high up on a machine that's potentially very, very dangerous to ride.
I imagine the first thing you got a crack,
have you ever fallen off?
I mean, you must have done, surely.
I try very hard not to. When you fall off, because you're kind of trapped underneath the handlebars, but high up. And it's on the point of balance. You're sitting right over the main axle. So if anything goes wrong, you're going head first over the front with the bike falling behind. So, crashes at speed, they're always nasty. I heard a figure the other day, and I don't know how true this is, but a figure quoted that in the Victorian era, at their height of use, they were killing 3,000 riders a year.
Well,
sure not, but that, I know. You have to take it seriously from those machines.
The first thing to master is getting on one. I imagine that for the uninitiated, when they're presented with a bike, it's not altogether obvious.
Do you need a ladder?
I don't know. Let's find out, Richard. How does a novice climb on?
Yeah, that's what a lot of people think. You kind of climb up and then somehow get it going. But no, the way to do it is there are some little mounting pegs or steps. Most of us have one, big ones have two steps. So you stand behind it and put a foot on it and scoot it along. And once the wheel's rolling on a smooth surface, it'll roll a long way before you have to pedal. So then you can climb up and get on the saddle, get your feet on the pedals, and then you can get it underway. So it's not as difficult as you think, because they do balance really nicely. Getting off is the harder bit, because you've got to find a step to get off, and it's behind you and you can't see it. So that's a bit more tricky. But once you got that mastered, now they're really nice.
The record you're trying to set, is it true it was set in 1886?
Yep, that's right, 132 years ago, which is difficult to get your head around. Mm. People have tried to beat it, but nobody's managed it.
And what was that? I mean, have you looked into what the person who did that was riding? Because, you know, you've got all the technology of a kind of racing penny farthing, and they clearly didn't.
They didn't, but penny farthing really hasn't changed. The bike I'm riding will be a steel frame, just like the bike he rode. So tyres, no gears, brake is pretty inadequate, to say the least. So it's basically the same machine. I mean, the thing that's changed is everything around it, in terms of navigation, nutrition, clothing, lighting, condition of the roads. When he rode, 1886, to put it into perspective, Carl Benz was just patenting the internal combustion engine, so there were no cars on the road at all.
Oh, way.
It does make a difference.
Which means there was no tarmac on the road, so he was riding on pretty rough roads.
Wow. What about a penny farthing Tour de France?
In the mountains.
Very good.
Yeah.
One of the best rides in the world. There's a fabulous rider, one of the best rides in the world. He's actually ridden the Tour de France route in sequence with the tour the day before.
Wow.
The whole thing. I know.
Wow.
Which shows they are capable machines. You know, if you know how to ride it and you're prepared to suffer a bit, you can travel some fair distances. As I'm about, well, hopefully going to find out. We'll see.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a step into the unknown, Land's End to John O'Groats. But I just wanted to try and find out what it was like for him, in a sense. Travel the whole length of the country.
What about the gears and stuff? Is it work rigged similarly? I mean, you've got some pretty big hills to get up and down on that ride. So.
Yeah, that's right. There are no gears. It's just direct drive.
There's no free wheel.
When you get to a hill, you pedal slower and slower, and if you can't keep it going, then you get off.
Oh, OK.
And then you can't get back on again.
Yeah, that's the trouble.
That's right, until you get right to the top. Yeah,
so, yeah.
Try and ride as much as I can. But, yeah, we'll see how it goes. There are some big hills.
You won't know until you get going. You've got a pretty good feeling you can break this, though.
It's quite weather-dependent. Wind direction is quite critical.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wouldn't be trying it if I didn't think we've got a fairly serious shot at it. But 5 days on a paddy farthing, it really is, you know, we're talking 17, 18 hours a day of riding. It's a journey into the unknown for me.
Sorry,
I think you were just going to prompt me there. We are doing it to try and raise money for children in need.
Mm.
So, there's a lot of people already put money into the pot for that. So thanks to all those people. And that's going to, you know, give me the impetus to work that bit harder at it.
And you're doing it in July, is this right? So hopefully the weather, I mean, you never know, it's midges up in Scotland. Then if it's the midge season, then is it could be you have to watch yourself, make sure you spray
that's
yourself.
Ride faster to keep away from
it. Yeah, yeah. And so people can go to your Just Giving page and hopefully get you nearer your target. And look, we'll catch up with
Am I going to ask the question I always ask people?
Do you want to do that?
I've got to.
Okay.
Just out of curiosity.
Okay,
for myself.
Then. The name Thode has attracted Andy because somebody we know shares that surname.
Well known theatrical and TV agent, I'd say. One of the best.
John Thode. Any relation? Thode.
Almost certainly is. There aren't many Thodes around. I do know one or two John Thodes. So, yeah.
I think the Cambridgeshire Thodes, I think they are.
Can I just say before we finish this conversation, taking this record on is costing a fair bit. And at the moment, I'm doing it as an amateur. I have a full-time job. But it's going to cost quite a bit to do it. So if anybody out there wants to sponsor the attempt and put their name on my shirt, Great opportunity for them to get some publicity and help us tackle this record.
There we are. That was this afternoon's show. And Richard Thode, that's incredible, isn't it? What an attempt that will be if he can do it, Andy. I'd like to think you'll be there at the finish line.
I'll be there.
Of course you will. Yeah, no, you liar. Anyway, that's us. He's raising money for charity, like all of these things. Have a bit of decency, man. We will catch up with you tomorrow from 1.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.